Good evening. Welcome to the March 21st meeting of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Trustees. Excuse the lozenge. I thought it would be better than the cough, so sorry about that. And we had closed session prior to this open session in which we discussed a matter of personnel. And we are going to move forward to an announcement of a consensus on the order of business. Anyone have any issues about that? Okay, great. And we'll move on to approval of minutes of March 7th. Ms. Shepard?
I would move approval of the minutes of March 7th.
I'll second that, please.
We have a motion by Ms. Sheffer and a second by Mr. Buckman. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. It's 7-0. Now we're going to move down to our student representatives to the board. Hello, ladies.
Good evening. Thank you.
Sorry, you go.
Okay. So for Slow High, to start us off in sports news, boys volleyball finished third in their home tournament this past weekend. Boys tennis beat Rigetti and Paso Robles last week at their home games. Boys varsity golf defeated Pioneer Valley at home last week. Baseball traveled to the Central Coast Showcase and won that entire tournament, so that's great. Boys and girls swim and dive traveled to Clovis this past weekend and both finished fifth out of 17 teams. Girls softball hosted Monarch High School last week and unfortunately lost in a hard-fought game. And the boys and girls track and field traveled to Atascadero and raced for CIF qualification times. In ASB news, we have organized a conference to go to. It's called the CASL, or California Associated Student Leader Board. So we've chosen four boys and four girls to attend that conference later in April. Last Friday, we had a spirit day for St. Patrick's Day and also held an open mic with a great turnout. This Saturday is our Baile de Primavera, which is going to be an official dance that's going to be put on by the ASB, FNL, and the Mecha Club on campus. So it's an interclub dance, which is the first we've had so far. The executive council packets have been released, and the elections will be the first week of April, so that's really exciting. And this past Monday, or yesterday, was the International Day of Happiness. So we had bubbles on campus, we gave out smiley face stickers, we just kind of had an overall aura of happiness on campus, which was incredible. In theater news, a Harry Potter musical this past weekend had three great weekend shows and two weekday shows with an incredible turnout. And Footloose has also begun rehearsals. And last but not least, the Color Run is going to be held on April 8th, and packets are out, and also you can sign up online. And the Tiger Fest is coming up on April 12th. That's going to be Wednesday. So come out and see what's going on at Slow High. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Caroline. Footloose, when do you think that's going to be? Do you have any idea of the date?
I think it's going to be either late April or early May. I don't have an exact date. So I will let you know when I find out, though.
I can't wait.
I can't either. Thank you.
We have a representative from Morro High School.
Yeah. All right. So the past couple of weeks at Morro Bay have been very busy. MBHS Dance Company's yearly show was a huge success, and all the performers had an amazing time while fundraising for the program. We've been having FFA Farmers Market every Wednesday in front of campus, and students are really enjoying that. FFA members are selling fresh eggs and veggies that are grown on campus, so that was pretty exciting. MBHS ASB put on the annual Neon Dance and sold over $1,000 worth of tickets. Students had a great time, and there were even student DJs, so it was pretty cool. We made a lot of profit off of that dance. We also held a March Madness basketball tournament at lunch last week with over 12 teams competing against each other, teams of three. Games took place at lunch, and students, teachers, and administrators competed against each other, so it was definitely a fun time. Mr. Allstott tried to dunk, but didn't quite get there. Select students were very excited to be a part of the Student Senate. and have the opportunity to share ideas and give feedback about our campus. Some future events that are coming up at Morro Bay is on Friday at lunch, we're having Mock Rock. It's not going to be a big after-school event this year, but we're having a smaller one to decide the county competitors. Our spring play, James and the Giant Peach, is happening March 30th, 31st, and April 1st. Should be a great play. The pirate players have been working really hard this year to put it on. We have a band concert coming up on April 4th at the Cal Poly Performing Arts Center. And also our highly anticipated academic award ceremony is taking place on April 5th. The junior-senior prom is taking place at the Pavilion on the Lake in Atascadero on April 8th, and the theme is Secret Garden, and the junior class is working hard this year to make it a year to remember. We are also very excited to be hosting a job fair on April 11th for students to explore everything from career possibilities to just local summer jobs that they can have. That's what's going on at Morro Bay. Thank you.
I'm sorry, dear. I can't see your name plate, so I can't call your name up.
Ellis
Fryer. Yeah. Thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Marilyn has a question.
I just wanted to, the Morro Bay High School Farmers Market, mm-hmm. Did I hear Friday?
Wednesdays.
At what time?
Just right after school. They set up, I think, just before the bell rings, and set up eggs, and they have the veggies change every time. But, yeah, it's pretty cool. Right before the pickup line, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it
does. In front of the front office.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Ladies, you're welcome to stay. We actually have some items on the agenda that may be of interest to you, high school schedules, but if you need to go, that's also okay. So thank you for joining us tonight. We are moving on to correspondence. There was no official correspondence received. Did anyone receive any other correspondence? Seeing no one with any correspondence, we'll move on to public comment. This is an opportunity for anyone in the audience to comment on district concerns and or if you can't stay for an item later in the agenda, you're welcome to speak to us now. Paige.
All, but it's just to let you know what the goals and aspirations are for SLO High students.
Ms. Holmes, do we have a timer on the screen today? Thank you. It is a 3-minute limit,
yeah.
But you'll be indicated.
I'll be there fast.
You'll see it.
Okay. Thank you very much for taking the time to hear me. Hello, my name is Paige Liebrich, and I'm a concerned parent of San Luis Coastal Unified School District, and in particular San Luis High School. I'm also a teacher with an admin credential and 25 years of experience. I've taught from kindergarten to the university level. I've worked in curriculum and instruction and accountability as a TOSA as well. I'm currently working at the County Office of Ed and the Alternative Ed Program with the Corton Community School students. I know what it means to work with disengaged students. I'm speaking to you on behalf of my concern of the change from trimester to semester. To begin with, please refer to the handout I have provided containing the mission statement, the ESLRs, and the message from the principal found in the parent-student handbook. To align with all three of these components, currently students have the ability to take 120 elective credits throughout their high school career, 24 courses in all. Doesn't this align with the college and career readiness goal of Common Core? Moving to the semester system will eliminate elective credits. Students would have 12 fewer elective classes over the span of their high school career. This is our children's time to explore opportunities through the myriad of electives, from agriculture leadership to programming to woodworking to welding to TV production, auto, fashion design, and nutrition, and a myriad of more. The knowledge gained from these electives is immeasurable. Isn't this the high school's goal, college and career readiness? Furthermore, in reviewing both semester schedules, several issues of concern emerge. Students will have more classes per day, which constitutes more homework and less family time. In addition, athletics would be outside the school day. Slo High has prided itself in stating that there's over 750 to 900 student athletes in one trimester. This affects over half the student population by having an increased workload and less family time. Keeping sports within the school day allows for family time. Slo High School has produced fabulous students who have attended colleges across the nation, from UC schools to Ivy League. Slo High is unique. The trimester works. I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you. And everyone else can stay for 9.03. Moving on. We have the business and budget update from Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, just a couple of things. One, I wanted to give kudos to Aaron Primer again, our new food service director for fish tacos at Morro Bay High, and just trying to reach out to kids, you know, have fresh food for our kids and get them excited about, you know, cafeteria and staying on campus. So I think it is a good thing that goes along with a lot of things we want to try to do with students, and especially in reading the Slo High Esslers and those types of things. So keeping kids on campus is great. We did have our annual CISC healthcare meeting at the district office. So all the districts in the county got together, and CISC comes out, and they kind of share the upcoming health rates and what's happening within our self-insured kind of area. And so it's, unfortunately for us, it's the kind of the same old story. It seems like year after year, healthcare costs are rising. And so I'm going to be pulling together kind of our health insurance advisory committee, which is representatives from all the unions, as well as, you know, board members as well. So if there's a member of the board, so right now I remember Marilyn, I think, was part of that a couple of years ago, so I've asked her to attend. So if there's anybody else that wants to attend that meeting, we've kind of narrowed it to about two people per union group in terms of having them to get together. So what we do is we look at all the rates, we talk about it, impact. You know, we're looking at increases of the cheapest plan, which is kind of the 80% high deductible plan of about $31 per month for the employee, all the way up to the 100% plan, which is $50 more a month for the employee, which means it's also $50 more a month for the district, vice versa, you know, all the way down. So pretty crazy in terms of overall costs and kind of what continues to seem like an ongoing thing for us. And as we know, in our 10-year budget, it's going to have it has a dramatic effect in out year. So I'll be getting that information, sharing with the board, and there's little things you can do in terms of prescription costs and deductibles and kind of going through to try to keep those costs down as much as possible. So we'll let you know.
Thank you, Mr. Pinkerton. And educational services update, Ms. McGrath.
Yes, thank you. So as Mrs. Shields explained very well last board meeting, the new state data dashboard is now launched, as she explained last time. So you can feel free to look around and have fun looking at our different data points and the things that were brought up. Next time we'll also be discussing some of the specifics that we've noticed of conclusions that we think are healthy to draw from that and some insight around that. So we will keep bringing more information around that topic. Just a reminder that open house times are beginning, right? So Pack Beach, I believe, is tomorrow, and then they, are over the next couple of weeks. So we look forward to visiting those, and it's a great opportunity for families and staff and teachers to get together and let people celebrate the great things happening in our schools. You'll also hear from me plenty tonight, so I think I'll stop there.
Thank you. Thanks for the heads up on the open house. I heard a lot of us going, oh, so soon. Thank
and
you.
May I ask a question along those lines? Are we going to have our Google Calendar populated with the open house schedule?
Thank you all. We're moving on to Measure D update with Mr. Pinkerton.
So, yeah, just one, you know, after having this study session last Thursday with the board, kind of going over upcoming projects as well as kind of where we're at Measure D budget-wise, well, actually two things. So, one, I did meet with our Citizens Bond Oversight Committee on Monday morning and kind of went over the same information we did with the board as well. Again, so we have a group of citizens as part of, you know, bond approval that have to, we meet quarterly, they report back to the board, so it's, you know, they oversee all expenditures, ensure that the Measure D dollars are spent as, you know, outlined in the bond measure itself. So it's a great group. Again, got together on Monday and went over those expenditures to date. And then lastly, we are talking currently with John Isom, who's our bond counsel, financial advisor, I should say, in terms of kind of the next bond sale moving forward. We have several projects upcoming, some key ones at Slo High, key projects at Morro Bay High, and so we are discussing competitive versus negotiated sale with the bond market right now. Last time we went out competitive, which worked out great for the district. He's starting to see some signs of a weakening bond market. He's looking at some other districts, you know, throughout the state of California who've done both competitive and negotiated and looking at both. And so I'll be kind of sharing some of that insight with the board as we move forward and trying to give you a recommendation in terms of where we think we might want to go and what's kind of the best course in the future.
Excellent. Thank you, Mr. Pinkerton. We're going to go on to item number 9.01, which is Ms. Newland, or maybe Ms. Oh, maybe my glasses on. April, I skipped right down there. Sorry about that. Thank you. 8.01.
So this item is our classified layoff resolution, and so if you'll remember two meetings ago, we Dr. Prater brought forward his superintendent budget reduction recommendations, and you approved that. And then at the last meeting, we discussed some site-level budget reductions, and so they're all included together in this one resolution. These would be the layoffs and reductions in hours that we're anticipating for CSEA. They're all CSEA positions for the classified staff for next year. So if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Shall we?
Mr. Millar.
Thank you. So these reductions in time do not always translate to an employee losing their job. It may mean reduced hours.
Correct. Some employees have bumping rights or displacement rights, which would bump into another position. We have vacancies that occur sometimes over the summer, and then there is one position that is a reduction in hours from 8 down to 6. And that would, so it affects different people differently.
Right. I'm not saying no one would end up being laid off, but it's a more complicated thing than just reading the reduction of.
Correct.
And things.
Yes.
Thank you.
Mr. Quisenberry.
And CSEA has had a chance to look at these and consider them now for well over a month?
Yes. I've met with CSEA on multiple occasions. I met with them again this week. We're working on an effects of layoffs document. We have appointments to meet with employees starting next week, and they will be present in all of those meetings. So we will do that jointly.
Thank you.
Mr. Buckman.
Thanks. Obviously, this saddens me that we're having to do this, and we're losing some of these people. And I noticed that there was a story in New Times on the cuts that we're making, and I'm sure the story was cut off because of space limit, but it did neglect to mention the cuts that are being made at the administrative level. I think it's $1.6 million, if I got that right. So I just want to get that out there as well.
Thank you, Mr. Buckman. This is a resolution. Is there anyone from the public who would like to speak to this item? Seeing no one.
I move approval of resolution 17-16-17.
We have a motion by Mr. Millar, a second by Mrs. Sheffer. All in favor?
No.
Roll call.
It's a roll call vote.
Mr. Millar?
Yes.
Mrs. Sheffer?
Yes.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Mr. Quessenberry?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Passes 6-0 with Mr. Unger being absent.
Thank you, Ms. Newland. Moving down to 9.01, technology and learning. This is Mrs. McGrath. And Ms. O'Hagan.
I know, right? I bring the old school yellow pad. She's got the... So tonight, Mrs. O'Hagan is going to share with you some data and information related to technology and learning. I just wanted to give you a couple of quick reminders. One of your board priorities was for us to explore some of the items that will be addressed in this presentation this evening. We were looking at doing a site as well as student and parent survey around this area. We really considered doing one ourselves and found what we think is a much better option that many of the major districts around us are also using, which allows us great comparable data and the ability to compare our information with that of the surrounding districts as well as other districts in the state and even nation, looking at how our trends are progressing in this area. So although this is our first time to give this data, I think this is a really neat opportunity when it comes to what has been focus area 5 for us around technology and innovation to have some measurable goals and things that we can watch to see how our actions and what we're doing is making an impact on student learning and teacher knowledge as well. So we're looking forward to this as an ongoing data piece for us. We feel like our data is really valid and has some statistical significance. Had a great response from parents, especially for the first time around, that Ms. O'Hagan will share with you, as well as staff and student participation. So it was great to see that our data seemed to not only be validated from the statistical significance perspective of the number of responses, but also the congruence that we're finding between parent and student responses, that those percentages often aligned, which gave us even more confidence that our data, what we were gathering, is correct. So I will hand it over to Ms. O'Hagan and let us know if you have any questions.
You're going to point and click?
I will point.
Okay. She's going to point and click for me. Okay. So I need you to click. Where is she? Oh, there you go. Okay, here we go. Okay, so let's take a look at the overview of the data collection. This slide shows an overview of when we took the data from our teachers, students, and parents, and we spent a month collecting the data. And you can see the students, we had a high response from students. That's from students in grades 3 through 12 only. Okay, we had 357 teachers, mostly teachers, a few administrators in there, as well as over 1,600 parents. Teachers were given time at a faculty meeting to take the survey, and students took the survey at school during class. The survey took about 10 to 15 minutes to complete. It was also available in Spanish. These collections are very strong, especially, as I said, in the area of parents. We gathered parent data from newsletters, ELAC meetings, and school events. Surveys were also set up in school offices to reach those parents without Wi-Fi or devices at home. And the feedback provided comes from what they call the CASE framework, in which there are 4 domains: classroom, access, skills, and environment. And as you can see, I put up there that all 15 schools met their statistically significant threshold, which means that we have about a 95% confidence level in our data. Okay. So let's take a look at our overall results as a district. And this is what we see upon logging into the platform. Okay, and principals will see the same thing, but only at their site level. The legend at the very top is what is used to identify the ranges of proficiency. So you can see up there the beginning, emerging, proficient, advanced, and exemplary.
Okay, those are the color codes that you'll see throughout this presentation. The average case score is about 1050, and our district scored a 1064, so we're a little bit above the average. And then looking across the classroom access, skills, and environment, you'll see that most schools have access showing as the highest domain, and classroom is typically coming in at the lowest domain. So we're with the trends that we see in other districts and across the nation as well. Access and skill domains typically come in higher than the outer domains. And if you look over at the environment, that's usually one level below the access and skills, and then classroom usually comes in one proficiency level even below environment. So the data you'll be seeing tonight in this presentation follows similar trends when compared to our county schools, the state level, and the national level.
Excuse me?
Mm-hmm.
You have the use of the 4 C's.
Yes.
Would you clarify that, please, eventually?
Yes.
Or?
I'm going to clarify it all, yes. Mm-hmm. So next slide. That's okay. Okay. So the following two slides will give us a snapshot of home and school access to internet and devices. Okay. So this slide shows a profile of home access for our teachers and students in San Luis Coastal. On the left side, we see that most of our teachers have a device and access to the internet at home. And then on the right side, we see the results from this same question posed to our students and parents. Okay, and it appears that we have a large number of students with internet at home, as well as a device to use at home. But obviously, we don't have 100%, and there are students without access at home that will need our support. For example, some sites are using a checkout system for devices to be used at home. And we are always striving to meet individual needs and finding ways to help students without access when needed.
So, mm-hmm. So I just have a quick question mm-hmm. here. First of all, I just want to thank the staff, the administrators, and the teachers, and the parents, and the students for work, because mm-hmm. this is just a huge success rate on getting people to participate. Mm-hmm. But it's also this risk that you guys took to take a look and see where we are, and this could have come up mm-hmm. differently. I have a question on and I haven't seen the survey, obviously. So mm-hmm. where it says 95% of students have access to internet at mm-hmm. home, so if somebody asked me if I had access to internet at home, I might say yes because it's on my smartphone.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure that translates into access for students to have internet access for doing their homework mm-hmm. or for doing research. And then the other thing, I'm not sure, again, how the survey read, but the question I had as I read these two, there seems maybe to be a question in between these two that is missing.
Mm-hmm.
So if we have 95% of students have access to internet and we have 90% have devices, mm-hmm. I'm just wondering if it would help all of us if we knew what the percent of connectivity to the internet is, because we have wonderful access, but we don't know whether it's connecting to the devices that the students mm-hmm. have.
Okay, Kim, can you go to the next slide? So what I did here was I drilled down a little bit deeper. And on this slide, here's a deeper look at one of the questions related to the Wi-Fi access at home. And this question was posed to both students and parents. So the students are the solid and the parents are the stripes. Because we did have a concern about receiving enough parent responses from families without computers or access to the internet. Okay, so when we start looking at this, we see that the results are similar. But if you look over to the far right, it shows that 94% have wireless internet access, and then 6% have wired internet access. So that would give us a little bit more information about how they're connecting. That was how the students answered, and then you see that the parents answered 99% have wireless internet access and 1% have wired internet access. So that does help us a little bit in determining how they're connecting to their computers and if they can use them as as an instructional tool at home. I did look at some of the questions specifically because I was interested in that as well, and they did ask particularly, is it not just using a computer at home for video games, but are you using these devices at home for school? So that was specific in some of the questions for the students and parents.
May I suggest that we let Mrs. O'Hagan complete her report first, and then we can take note of our questions.
A lot of good questions. Okay, thanks. By seeing that the students and parents are, the data points are very similar, it helps confirm that this information is valid and reliable. As previously mentioned, data collections for parents were held at parent nights, ELAC meetings, and set up in school offices to reach as many parents as possible. Okay. So the next portion of this presentation will show overall profiles of our teachers, students, and classrooms that highlight areas of celebration as well as growth opportunities. All right, so this is a big slide. This is a summary of all the data as it relates to our teachers. There's a lot of information on this slide, and it's pulled from multiple data points. So if you look at the red circle under the graphic of the 21st century teacher, that's the number of our teachers surveyed. And then at the very top, you'll see that legend again that I pointed out to you earlier with the color coding. And I'm going to go around and touch on each area with you. Okay? So let's start with the green or the advanced areas. And starting at the very bottom, we see that teachers are very confident with technology, the very, very bottom there. Yep. 71% feel confident that they can solve their own tech problems, and 69% feel that they learn new technology easily. And this statistic made the IT department very happy. And then going up to beliefs, under the area of beliefs, teachers agree that technology does enhance learning. Okay? So that's another area where we're coming in as advanced. And then foundational skills, moving up, such as sending emails and creating docs and spreadsheets, are also coming in as advanced. And then online skills and multimedia skills show our teachers as proficient in those two areas. Online skills would include online collaboration and contributing to projects with students and colleagues. Multimedia skills include photo, audio, and video editing. And so I like to think about the tools that we've already provided to our teachers to apply those foundational online and multimedia skills. We've provided them with Google Apps, the one-to-one devices, the saturation of Wi-Fi across the district, as well as the ongoing training and support. And it's also interesting to note that teachers scored lowest in their multimedia skill set and showed a higher interest in learning more about multimedia. So if you look at their multimedia skills were at 40%, but 54% of them expressed an interest in learning more about that area. Okay, and then finally, at the far right, we see that digital citizenship skills are an area of growth, and we'll be looking at this area in more detail later on. Okay, so this next slide looks similar, but it's a summary of the data as it relates to our students. Again, there's a lot of info on this slide that is pulled from the same data points as we saw in the previous slide. So looking at that red circle, we surveyed 3,721 third through 12th grade students. And again, I'll touch on each area. So starting at the very bottom, student overall confidence is very strong. 51% of our students feel that they can solve their own tech problems, while 87%, which is the blue exemplary, feel that they learn new technologies easily. And then starting over at beliefs, student beliefs around technology we see are consistent with the teacher beliefs that we saw in the previous slide. Okay, when looking at the foundational and online skills of our students, we see that these are both areas of growth, while their multimedia skills are advanced. So our students are, we have a lot to do with their foundational skills and online skills, but their multimedia skills are very high. And it's interesting, again, to note that the student skill levels are opposite to those of their teacher counterparts. And then looking at digital citizenship skills, they're also consistent with that of their teachers. So that's another, that's kind of a reinforcement that we have some work to do with digital citizenship. And just having this kind of information provides us with an awareness of our students' skills around technology, and this will have an impact on curriculum and instruction and better prepare our students for college and career. Okay. Now this slide, this is a graphic that provides us with a profile of classroom learning and use of the four C's, which are communication, collaboration, creativity, and critical thinking. Okay. So this is a little bit different. We're going to start over here at the top, and we see that 68% of our students are collaborating on a regular basis, which puts us in the advanced category. And this is collaborating online electronically. Okay. However, looking to the right of that, only 21% of students are asked to write online. And this is something we can build and develop by relying more on our available tools, such as the Chromebooks and the Google Apps, which provide students more opportunities to be writing online. Okay. At 55%, we are coming in proficient in the area of utilizing technology for critical thinking and problem solving on a regular basis. Okay. And a regular means monthly or more frequently. Okay. And then on the far right, assessments is another potential growth opportunity. So currently, 37% of teachers are regularly assessing students in an online fashion. Online assessments allow teachers to increase the quantity and the quality of their feedback to their students. Adaptive online tests are now being seen as a key tool for building personalized learning programs that address students' individual strengths and weaknesses. Okay. And then down here at the bottom right, 62% of our teachers are using assistive technology to provide access to our learners on a regular basis. And I wanted to find out and look more what do they mean by assistive technology. And it includes e-books, posting coursework and homework online, such as in Google Classroom, using LCD projectors and document cameras to display or project the content. So those are all examples of the assistive technology in this platform. Okay. Again, we see the consistency in the previous data profiles that digital citizenship is definitely an area of growth. 73% of teachers that we polled report that they are spending less than 3 hours per year on digital citizenship, okay, formally and informally. Okay. So at the very bottom, you've noticed that there's sometimes a phrase or two down at the bottom, and Bright Bytes provides us with a rationale on the importance or the why of this data. And this is, and I liked what they said here, technology is a key driver towards instruction that impacts student learning outcomes. Being aware of the classroom setting and the typical learning experiences afforded to students is the first step towards cultivation of 21st century learning in our students. Okay. Moving along, we have a professional development profile. And this displays the interest of our teachers around professional development and technology. And there are 10 topics showing within our data. However, I'm just going to display the top three for you here tonight. And what's great about this is that we can also filter it by grade level and by school. And it's been interesting for me to see the differences in PD interest by grade level versus by overall site. So our teachers, again, are interested in multimedia skills, like you saw earlier. And then coming in second is online tools for critical thinking, and 40% classroom management with technology. And when I look at this by site level, it's very similar. But there are some slight differences, especially by grade level, too. So third grade teachers may have a different preference for PD than a seventh grade teacher. Okay. And then again at the bottom, you see on this slide, you see a rationale as to why this matters. Both new and experienced teachers benefit from ongoing support. Okay. These next few slides will be pointing out some specific data points as they relate to areas of celebration and growth that we saw in the overall profiles previously. All right. So here's an area of celebration that I want to point out. Both our teachers and students want to continue learning. And you will notice at the top of the screen is a specific data point that I pulled out to show you. Okay, I want to learn more about effective technology use for teaching and learning. Okay, so looking partway down below the bar graphs, you'll see a highlight. Okay, and we can see that 85% of teachers and 50% of our students want to continue on their journey of learning. We are also given a rationale of why this is important at the bottom of the chart. and I thought this was interesting. Teachers' beliefs about technology are considered more influential than their actual knowledge about technology. Okay, another area of celebration is the student and teacher beliefs that technology enhances learning. So you can see the comparison of the students who are solid and the teachers who are the stripes, that they do remain consistent in their beliefs. Okay, 62% of students, looking down at that data highlight, 62% of students and 82% of teachers share this belief. And in looking at why this matters, why does this matter that they have these beliefs? Well, research tells us that students are more interested in using technology when it is tied to the curriculum and integrated in meaningful ways. And we can also see that the level of engagement increases in the classrooms that are using technology effectively. Okay. Another growth, now we're looking at growth opportunities. And as we've been seeing consistently throughout this data, a growth opportunity for us is in the area of digital citizenship. And I've highlighted again for you one data point representing digital citizenship. Students are taught how to act respectfully online. You see that up there at the top. And the data highlight down below points out that 45% are being taught this on a regular basis. Again, regular meaning monthly or weekly. But it's important to note that this survey expands more on this subject area. It includes questions on identifying and preventing cyberbullying, internet safety, social networking for learning, and teacher and parent knowledge of cyber safety. And while we do have a digital citizenship program in place through our E-rate funding, we need to provide more opportunities for teachers to incorporate digital citizenship throughout their lessons. And then I thought this was another interesting point on why this matters at the very bottom. And they said, instead of restricting access, we should educate young people to participate in the digital world responsibly, ethically, and safely. Through proper use of social networking sites, students learn social media etiquette and cultivate their digital citizenship. So I thought that was a very interesting point. And we have opened up and allowed more access and more teaching opportunities. Okay, and another growth opportunity is the area of student-to-teacher collaboration. And here we see the consistency in the data between students and teachers. Again, while we have noted that students collaborate online with each other, we see that students and teachers are not collaborating to the fullest extent. Okay? So we do have these collaborative tools available, such as Google Docs, Google Classroom, and the devices in the classrooms, but we need to continue to develop our teachers in this area and model that more in the content areas. So the bottom of this screen reminds us of why this is important. Collaboration and messaging allow teachers to stay connected to their students. That will, in turn, provide a deeper understanding of their students' needs. And we're getting there. Okay, in summary, I wanted to just point out again the key strengths that we touched on tonight are the high level skill level of our students and teachers, the home and school access to devices and internet, and student and teacher beliefs that technology enhances learning. And over on the right side of the slide, the teacher use of the four C's are a growth opportunity. And those four C's, again, are collaboration, communication, creativity, and critical thinking. We need to grow in the area of student digital citizenship, online assessment, and professional learning. So having access to this concrete data allows us to more strategically target our resources and our time and energy. And here at the bottom, again, I've displayed the overall SLC-USD dashboard that you saw in the earlier slide so that you can end with where we are currently at and where we need to go. So this would be a good time for questions.
Excellent. Okay. Thank you. Do we have questions from the board? Mr. Buckman.
Yeah. This is a phenomenal breakthrough, and I just really appreciate it. I understand we were going to think about recreating the wheel, and we've discovered this device. And in talking to Kimberly today, I found out that this device actually allows us to compare ourselves to districts in the county, mm-hmm. the state, mm-hmm. and across the country. Mm-hmm. So I'm very excited about that. So Kimberly, just and I do have a couple of questions, but in terms of that, you've taken a look at that. Can you just bring us up to date on the comparisons that you saw Are we similar?
Yes. Actually, I did, and I didn't notice any extreme outliers, okay, across the county or the state or the nation. So we are in line with the trends. So we do see similar trends.
Okay. And so on one of the things that caught my eye was the digital citizenship and then reading headlines. And so in Washington, I'm thinking they could learn a lot if they were to come here and learn about digital citizenship. And as I looked at the teachers, it looks like there's almost a request for more on digital citizenship because they're saying they need more work in that. So I'm very heartened by that, and I'm heartened by that the numbers between the students and the teachers work out. So is there curriculum for that? Where do we turn to get our teachers? Go ahead. Go. You're excited.
I'll be quiet. Okay. It's good. These are great questions. We do, because of E-rate funding, we have to have a digital curriculum in place, which is Common Sense Media, and it's free. And we've been teaching that to our students using at the elementary level, mostly with our library texts. So when the students go to the library, they're getting these lessons. And I've been doing all the training for those library techs on that. And then middle school is a little bit different how they're rolling it out. And at the high schools, it's at Slo High, it's the health teacher. So all the ninth grade students are getting these lessons. And then I think it's John Andre at Morobe High who's doing it. So we're trying to hit all the students, but it's not enough. And so I'm finding that we're going to need to incorporate more of this into, like I said earlier, the daily lessons. And so as I plan for, you know, workshops with teachers or when I go in, I want to incorporate that, those kinds of things into my trainings with teachers and start. Now I have some concrete data to say this is what you said you needed, and now we can give it to you. There's a wealth of resources on this Common Sense Media website for parents, teachers. I mean, they've thought of everything, so it's great. Yeah.
So that's exciting. The other thing that I'm excited about is this seems to directly link to the LCAP, the district's All Means All, the district's 21st technology, and then the board. One of the board's interests this year, which was specifically technology. So this was just really affirming for me as one board member to see this. And so again, I think it was a risky and bold move. And I just want you briefly went over it, but this is going to be an ongoing touch. It's kind of like when teachers do they want to check to see if the kids are getting where they put the comma. And then they check again and check again. So is that part of the plan?
We're hoping to include it in our LEA plan addendum within our technology and innovation area. And we do think that an ongoing check, this is a way of progress monitoring, like I kind of mentioned in the introduction. It's been a tricky area in the past to really measure how are we making progress towards this. So I think this gives us some more quantitative data around how can we measure our actions and are they truly making a difference for kids.
And I know part of the board's discussion this summer was access for all children, access for all children. And what this looks like to me is that we may have more access than we may have just guessed at. And I think that may mean that it may cost the district less money to bring access to all children. So, again, thank you.
Thank you.
Mrs. Schiffer.
I appreciate the information with regard to what kind of professional development teachers are looking for. And I'm hopeful that we can figure out a way to maybe those who are using the legend, who are most proficient and strong, can maybe do some each one teach one a little bit to bring people along and respond to those areas of interest with regard to professional development. I would express a wish that throughout any training that the teachers do, I saw it wasn't one of the top three on the wish list for professional development, but if digital citizenship can be woven through as a strand for all professional development and strengthened to some extent in the classroom by the by the teachers. I think that's an important and ongoing item that needs to be addressed with the students. But and knowing how technology changes, how rapidly it's evolving, that professional development will need to be an ongoing commitment by the district to keep teachers coming along up to speed. Mm-hmm. So thank you.
Mrs. Roger?
Thank you. Thank you for this information. A couple of things that I wrote down here. On access, I'm astounded by the access figures. I mean, really astounded. And very different from what I would have anticipated. And I'm wondering if you were able to or are able to disaggregate the data so that we can see access in Title I schools as compared to access in non-Title I schools?
Yes, we can. Uh-huh. We can see that.
I would be interested in seeing that.
Okay. I've got it.
Uh-huh. Take it in a Friday Notes or whatever. Mm-hmm. Because if, in fact, our students in poverty do have this kind of access, I am thrilled. Mm-hmm. I'm really beyond belief. And then I noted teachers want multimedia skills with a big asterisk by it. Mm-hmm. So that seems to be the area of PD that they have expressed a desire to learn more about. How might we provide that?
Well, there's 10 different data points as far as the PD goes. I showed you the top three district-wide. So if I'm going to be going to SLO High, for example, to do some sort of training, I'll look at SLO Highs and cater my training to their needs.
Okay.
But we have teacher leaders at the sites. You know, we have department leads. We have ed tech leads at all of the sites. And I work with them on providing support to their sites at the site level. And so now I'm planning to share some of this data with them so we can look at it together. And if we're going to be providing professional development to our math team, then let's incorporate some multimedia or some online assessments or things like that, or showing them how to collaborate with their students while we're teaching them the content.
So
we want to weave it in.
You would try to integrate it into PD that's already planned?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then I wrote down example. Could you please give me an example of what a teacher-student collaboration might look like?
Yes. Yes. Would you like that? Okay. There's so many, but the one that comes to mind would just be a Google Doc or a Google slideshow like this, where the student is developing their work. The teacher can have access to it and jump in while the student's working and provide ongoing feedback. So rather than waiting until the student has completed their project and turned it in, the teacher can now see the student in real time and provide them with real time feedback. And I think that really helps the teacher understand the student's strengths and weaknesses, and doesn't waste the student's time either if they're going off in the wrong direction.
Right.
So it's a great way for me to, it's a real easy way, I think, for me to show teachers and for teachers to show other teachers how to do that
in real time.
The real day. Mm-hmm.
And I noted that teacher-student collaboration that we want to increase. So you're in the process, I guess, or we
yes.
are in the process at our sites of showing
mm-hmm.
teachers how they can do this.
Yes.
This real time.
Mm-hmm. And I think looking back at the data, they were either on this side where they they weren't collaborating with their students, or we had the earlier adopters on the other side. So we do have teachers very strong in that area, but then we just have a big gap where we need to start pulling the others
along.
So we've been incorporating that more and more, but now we have the data to support it. Like, this is what you've asked for, and this is what you need, and this is why.
This was a great presentation. Thank you very much.
Mr. Quisenberry.
Thank you again for the presentation. A couple of things. When we talk, I'm not as excited about the access as some of my fellow board members are. I still see 10%
mm-hmm. yes.
that don't have access, which concerns me. So You know, I'm gratified that it's 90%, but I really think we should work very hard to make it 100%. The other thing was in your online citizenship is the verification of sources. Mm-hmm. When someone goes to research, you know, what are refereed sites, what are not, what are reliable sources of information, is that considered part of the citizenship?
Yes, it is. Okay. Actually, there's a specific question to that as well.
Uh-huh. Okay, because that's really mm-hmm. very, very important. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of information out there.
Yes.
And some are reliable and some mm-hmm. Not so reliable.
Right.
Could you give me the name of that Common Sense website? Is it just called
CommonSenseMedia.org?
.org. Thank mm-hmm. you. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. And I can put that in the Friday notes. That would be helpful.
My question has to do, again, with the classroom interaction. I assume those are in the classroom where the teachers can jump in and give real-time feedback to students. That's in the classroom setting.
Well, a teacher can be at an in-service or a training and be accessing what their students are doing in the classroom. So the teacher does not have to physically be there to be providing real-time feedback to the students.
And also for homework? Are they able to?
Mm-hmm. Okay. They can. If it's all done online like this, yes. Uh-huh. Yeah. It's amazing.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah.
Is there anyone from the public who would have any questions or like to speak to this matter? Well, seeing no one, thank you for a wonderful presentation.
Thank you.
Mrs. O'Hagan and Mrs. McGrath.
Thank you.
And now we're going to move along to the next generation science standard update.
Great. So I'm here with Tristan Shorba tonight, and as you know, the state has adopted new science standards called the Next Generation Science Standards, and so that provided us the opportunity to really reevaluate our courses at all levels. So as elementary is looking at their science materials and how it can be modernized and update to match the needs of the new standards, as well as middle school using an integrated model and changing our courses at the high school to begin with biology and chemistry. Has allowed us that to align with our new standards. So tonight, Tristan will share with you some information about things that have been developing related to our new standards, and we will be happy to answer questions at the end.
Thank you. Tristan is our district science TOSA.
All right, well, good evening. Again, I'm Tristan Shorba, the Science TOSA, and I'm excited to be able to share with you tonight some of the updates and changes we've been working towards in our San Luis Coastal Science programs. And so, if I can figure out how the clicker works. Oh, it's the down one. All right, very intuitive, apparently. All right, so just to keep in mind, as we're moving towards transitioning to these new science standards and full implementation, is it's not just the what has changed in terms of science instruction, but how instruction and assessment goes for our teachers, as well as the environment for student learning. And so, again, the focus is on students learning as scientists and engineers through very student-focused, active inquiry. It's not just important that students know the what of science, but also students are undergoing and learning the how they know that, how we know that, and why we know that, and why that knowledge is important and how we use that. Additionally, the engineering and the design process is also embedded throughout the grade levels within in the standards. So engineering is highlighted especially as well in these new science standards. Additionally, we have more information on the new California science test known as the CAST, and as well as the CAA, California Alternative Assessment for Science as well. So starting this year, statewide in grades 5, 8, and in specific grades in high school, statewide we'll be doing the pilot for CAST and for CAA Science. At high school, for the pilot, the grades are assigned by the CDE. And so what that means for us this year is our students in 10th grade at Slo High and Morro Bay will be taking the science pilot. And then at Pack Beach, our seniors will be taking the pilot. Again, those were assigned by the state at the high school level. Next year, we'll be looking at a field test for the CAST. Again, grades in 5, 8, and we're not sure quite what high school looks like yet, but we'll find out soon. Year 2 pilot for the CAA, because they really want to make sure that assessment is really strong for our students in special education. And then 2 years out, 18, 19, we're looking at the first operational test for the CAST, again in grades 5, 8. And then at this point, it seems that we as a local district have a choice about when we want to give that as a district to our 12th graders, 11th graders, or seniors. But we have to assess all students in that grade level district-wide. So it's all juniors or all sophomores. We can't pick and choose how that works. Again, we'll have a field test for CA, the alternative test in 18-19, and then beyond in 19-20, then we'll be in full operational assessment for everybody. A couple things to note about the assessment changes. It will resemble the SBAC in terms of being a digital assessment, at least for the CAST. Part of it will be computer adaptive. There will be an embedded performance task within the computer-based test. And other changes are at the fifth grade level. The two-thirds of the test are fifth grade specific. One-third of the test spans standards K-5. Another change for the eighth grade test, the old test used to just focus on eighth grade standards. Now the test focuses on standards 6th, 7th, and 8th, so it's banded. And then the high school test used to just focus on life science standards. Now it's all high school standards the assessment focuses on. Additionally, the CA science will be actually an embedded performance task. That's supposed to be embedded in classroom instruction for our special ed students. So as we're talking about what we've been working on this year, starting with elementary, we've been updating our science curriculum from FOSS California to FOSS Next Gen, and so we've been rolling that out year one of 3 years. The curriculum is three modules, so we're rolling out one this year. Some teachers have elected to actually do more than one this year, which is awesome, and we're actually rolling out right now this week our kind of second or third phase of teacher professional development, and it's really neat to hear teachers seeing the student excitement and engagement and seeing how great some of the rollout is going this year with that. We've also been engaging in a lot of teacher professional development. We've had a fall PD for reading and science for our elementary teachers provided by myself and Diana Jones, our ELA elementary TOSA, for the reading end. We also had curriculum training in January on the elementary PD staff development day in January with the curriculum trainers for each grade level. And like I said, we're in our spring follow-up right now, provided by myself for the science end and Diana Jones for the reading curriculum end. I've been working with Diana Jones again on identifying and purchasing science reading texts for teachers and to put in students' hands that align with both our reading curriculum needs as well as the science needs to begin to integrating some of those curriculums and to help teachers be a little more efficient and make the learning more relevant to students. Also, I've been involved in some parent communication with principals, coffees in the mornings at some of our elementary sites, and being able to communicate those changes to parents, as well as family engineering nights. We've been using those as opportunities to highlight some of those changes as well. And we talked more about those family engineering nights about last month at one of the board meetings. At middle school, like Ms. McGrath was saying, we are aligning to the California Preferred Integrated Model. And so what that looks like is some of our grades, for example, in 7th and 8th grade, to help the transition of chemistry from 8th grade to 7th grade, which is where it's landing now. It's being double taught in 7th and 8th grade this year, because it's going away in 8th grade next year. So again, moving some of those content pieces, we're being very strategic so we don't have learning gaps for our students as they progress through the middle school grades and into high school as well. Having a lot of teacher professional development along the instructional changes and shifts with pullout days, TCTs, attending state rollouts, working with some of the state early implementer districts and learning with and from them. Also starting to have teachers test some aligned curricular materials to help support some of the content that's shifting. So they may not have lessons or units developed on that, so we can provide some of that support as well. That helps guide us and our teachers in looking at some curriculum that we might eventually want to pilot and eventually adopt in the future. For high school, we've been really focusing on looking at our high school model and realigning that according to the California Science Framework, and I'll kind of share a little bit more about that in a little bit. But really what that looks like for us, especially moving next year, is redesigning a freshman next-gen biology course. Again, a lot of teacher professional development going on into informing those choices and changing teacher instruction in the classroom as well. So what this new high school model is really about is taking the traditional biology, chemistry, and physics courses and integrating the earth and space science standards within those courses. So what this is going to require is really kind of deconstructing those courses and rebuilding them to reflect more of the NGSS changes, both in content as well as instruction as well. The advantages for this is that our courses will now reflect much more the integrated nature of science. There won't be necessarily considered an integrated science course, but it will be lightly integrated with the earth science as well. And again, that's in alignment with some of the kind of implicit recommendations from the California Science Framework. And so eventually that moves us to a 9th grade NGSS biology course and a 10th grade NGSS chemistry course. And so you can see on the matrix here, we have this year integrated science, biology, AP Chem, Chem, and so on. Next year, what that means is we'll be having biology, NGSS biology taught to freshmen and sophomores to make sure that we get everybody biology that needs it. We'll be continuing to kind of be teaching AP Chem and Chem that junior year. And then the next year, 18-19, transition year two, having, again, just biology as a freshman class, chemistry as a sophomore class, but still taught to juniors, AP chemistry potentially still as a first-year chemistry class taught to juniors. And then finally, 19-20, full implementation of our new model where we have biology as a freshman class, chemistry as a sophomore class. AP chemistry now would become a second-year chemistry course, which is actually intended is how it's intended in terms of how it's written and structured as a second-year chemistry course. And we're excited about being able to do that for our students because that would actually provide more access for students for that course. Additionally, as we move to the new model, we've decided to discontinue the offerings of honors at the 9th and 10th grade levels at the full new model implementation, given that the rigor and focus of the NGSS is all about, again, active student inquiry. And we believe that having a heterogeneous student population would allow challenges for all students at the 9th and 10th grade levels. We've seen great success in our integrated science class, not having honors there and really having a nice heterogeneous environment there where students can really learn with and from each other and value each other and have some very rich, deep learning going on there. And since we offer a advanced placement chemistry course as a junior level course, students can continue developing that chemistry knowledge as they get into junior or senior year. What we really like about this course for a number of reasons is, again, it increases student access to this AP chemistry course as a second year chemistry course, and again, prepares all of our students for success by taking these college prep very rigorous and engaging courses. All right, moving forward. Moving forward to next year, at the elementary level, though, we'll be implementing year two of our science update in terms of our curriculum. We're actually going to be looking at how to integrate reading, writing, and science together. That's going to be an ongoing project with myself, Diana Jones, the elementary TOSA, as well as some teacher leaders at each grade level. Continued teacher professional development, specifically in the curriculum, and then looking at sustainability in terms of materials management and how can we easily replenish the consumables that teachers are using in all these investigations that they're doing with their students. The middle school level, we're continued refining our alignment to the, again, California preferred integrated model, continued professional learning for our teachers, continued testing of curriculum materials, and then really looking at, now that we have assessment model for our teachers to look at in terms of the CAST, redesigning assessments and analyzing that. Finally, moving forward with high school next year is implementing that freshman. Again, next year will be freshmen and sophomores, though. Next-gen biology course with the redesigning of chemistry and physics kind of ongoing throughout that year and then moving forward with those the following year. We see this also as an opportunity as we're redesigning our high school science courses that we can redesign with common final assessments. So we can begin bringing science into the kind of common assessment, data use of of instruction and redesign and kind of collaboration going on between sites and teachers there. Again, I hope to be able to provide some of our high school teachers with some curricular materials to start testing to support them as well. It's just been a joke that that high school is the Wild West in science right now, because anyone, it's you can choose whatever model you want. So we don't see a lot of curricular materials quite yet. So in summary, again, we have a curriculum rollout at the elementary level that we're continuing to implement. We're working on integration with ELA in the science. Middle school, we have the alignment to the integrated model, Cal preferred integrated model with curriculum testing. And then at high school, we have that big course offering sequence model shift. Thank you.
Mr. Buckman.
Thank you. Sometimes I'm not sure I understand NGSS, but that was really helpful. I did jot down one thing, and then if we know that the state's going more and more, in fact, has come to college and career readiness, I'm wondering within all of this, I didn't hear, and I'm sure it's there, but I just want to ask, within it, are there career pathways? Is there some, along the CTE lines?
Yeah, so just to start off, the NGSS are designed with college and career readiness in mind, for sure. Part of that also just being that incorporation of engineering. Morro Bay is looking at having a biotech pathway, in which some of the courses, specifically the chemistry course, would have a CTE biotech equivalent, basically a crossover course, and then they would move from that chemistry CTE course into a CTE biotech course. So there is some connections. That was just up to the individual departments and schools if they wanted that connection.
Okay.
For a CTE pathway.
Okay. So just to go back, my understanding is CTE is now sort of a requirement within the curriculum. So when you say it's up to the school sites, just how they're going to do it, or is this? Are you working with them on college and career readiness?
Sure. Well, in terms of CTE pathways that the schools are offering, the one that connects directly right now with what the schools are offering in terms of CTE pathways right now is just the biotechnology pathway that Morro Bay is offering. And
Mr. Millar.
Thank you. I noticed Ellen and I were reminiscing when Foss showed up at C.L. Smith. It was a bit of a headache, as I recall. Oh, sorry. I'm channeling Amy, Principal Amy right now. So the Foss materials and material replenishment, is that going to be handled on the site level? Or is it something IMC can help out with, or what's the plan for that?
So for this year, we're really strongly supporting that as instructional services, providing the replenishment of consumables, because we really want this to be a easier transition. It's not going to be easy, but an easier transition for elementary teachers. And then that was part of that for kind of a next year, what's that sustainable system for materials management? And I think in terms of the changes of support that we're going to eventually have to look at some potential instructional services support, but also some site work as well. And what that exactly looks like, that will be an ongoing process between myself, Amy, and our NGSS Science Committee.
And it just appears to me that monitoring consumables also provides you a feedback loop on how much and how well are we doing things in the classroom.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you.
Mrs. Sheffer.
Thank you. Referring back to elementary schools again, as Amy will recall, when we were at C.L. Smith and working as volunteers, I had a kind of full-time gig setting up the FOSS packets each week. But my question has more to do with, I know that it's been a long time ago, but realizing how difficult and challenging it was for the teachers to get science into their curriculum, and now it's becoming a much stronger component, if I'm correct, as a requirement to include science in the day. How is that working at the elementary level. I appreciate that you're indicating some of it will be integrated, which I think is wonderful, as we're trying to do with much of our Common Core work here. But I just want to confirm and be assured that our elementary teachers will have the time in their day to successfully add this. And I see Mrs. Shields is ready to respond. Thank you.
What you're saying is a real issue, and finding the time to fit everything in, if we say that we recommend a certain amount of time for math, for reading, for writing, for language, social studies, on and on. If you separate that all out, our kids will probably be here till 5 o'clock, so we know that right from the beginning. So our answer and our hope and the plans that Tristan and Diana are already starting is it's about integration. It's about when we're teaching the big science concepts in this unit, what's the math learning at that grade level that might match up? What's the reading that might happen during language arts time to get ready for that science lab? But if we treat it all separately, we're not going to be able to get it all in. So that's the work that we've started in our department, but it's also the work that's happening out at some of our sites already. I will tell you, Pacheco is a great example. With their 90-10 model, both in kindergarten and now in first grade, they took everything, they kind of put it all out there, backwards mapped what are the standards, how do we group them together in a meaningful way to do the 90-10 program, and what's that look like in an integrated model. My hope is that next year, as even we are looking at reducing PD costs, we get some of that work happening out through site-based time, where teachers really can sit down by grade levels and look at everything that they're teaching, think about what are the key learnings for that trimester, the year, and then develop kind of integrated scope and sequence to get through and be productive with that. I think it's also worth saying, we wouldn't be here without the work of Mr. Shorba, but in attending some of the professional development sessions that he's provided for our elementary teachers, there's this new spark back. Our teachers are having a lot of fun. They really understand how important science is for our students. These engineering nights that you've been seeing, some of you have been able to attend at elementary, our families are embracing it. We're pretty excited about, we push science out back with No Child Left Behind, and we got to make sure it's reading and writing, math only. Science is back in, and it's cool, and it's awesome, and those careers for our kids in the future, we think many of them are looking like they're going to be science-based, and that's what the research tells us. So I'm pretty excited about that.
So just to follow up, it sounds like, once again, if I'm not mistaken, San Luis Coastal is taking what's being, Common Core, Next Generation Science, what we're being told we need to do, and we are creating our own curriculum. We're figuring out a way to kind of customize this to make it work best for the students in our district, just as we did with the mathematics. Before there were Common Core textbooks, we came up with our own materials to be able to use and in the classroom and with our students, and it sounds as though we're doing the same thing with Next Generation Science Standards.
I don't think we're creating our own curriculum at this point, but I think we're taking really outstanding curriculum, and I think we've had the opportunity and the resources to adopt and then purchase, the best of the best in curriculums. But the curriculums that we've adopted, they're complex. They take a lot of thinking. They take a lot of planning. So I think what we're trying to put in place with the support of Tristan and Diana is how can we develop those integrated units? What does that look like to make the very best instruction and learning experiences for our kids?
Okay. Well, thank you. Once again, kudos to our willing and able and competent staff and teachers and administration, everyone working together to help our students achieve great success in this area. Thank you.
I'd just like to add that I'm very excited about the additional rigor and excitement that's now coming along with science instruction, from kindergarten through 12th grade. So thank you very much for your contribution to us. It's a giant step forward for us as you've been our science TOSA. Is there anyone from the public who would like to speak to this matter? Mrs. Neuhauser?
Hi, my name is Judy Neuhauser from Los Osos. I am really pleased that the district decided to buy the FOSS kits, because I'm a personal fan of the FOSS kits, because it advocates hands-on multisensory learning for children. I've used the FOSS kits. I used it both at Pacheco in sixth grade, and then I used it at Monterey Grove at third grade. There's a couple of cautions I want to put out there, and one is, I mean, this is probably directed more for staff, but the FOSS kits, the last FOSS kits were so, I mean, they expected you to have an hour a day minimum, and every day, in order to complete all of the lessons. And so what I did as the teacher that was doing the third grade science, I went through and figured out what were the really core concepts that they needed to know, and how was I going to make sure that I had, which kinds of activities was I going to use out of the FOSS kit, or modify slightly in order to do that in the most expeditious use of time. There's a tendency for teachers to look, especially if they're not science, hands-on science fans, they don't understand it, they've not done it before, and they're scared of things going wrong, is they'll go for the videos and the text, and they will read about it, and that is not science. That's information. Science is hands-on, experiential, multisensory learning. And I'll give you an example from when I taught it at Camp Keep. I don't know if I said this before, but I don't think I can say it too many times. We were looking at adaptations at sixth grade. We'd see deer. I'd ask kids what their understanding of deer's adaptations for hearing was, and they'd all raise their hand and say big ears. But when you asked them if they believed it worked, they all said no. So they could give a right answer. They didn't really believe it. And so we would try it, and their eyes would get big and their jaws would drop, literally. And they go, that's amazing. That really works. And I go, guys, don't you know the joke about old people going, what did you say? And they say, is that what they're doing? And so all week you would see them use it. You cannot use science concepts in engineering if you do not have a deep understanding, and you don't get the deep understanding from reading, and you don't get the deep understanding from videos. Those are support. And FOSS is very clear that the experience comes first, and whatever reading you do about it comes next, in order to now that you've got the excitement, now that you have some of these hands-on experiences, now the reading begins to make sense. So that's my one caution. Thank you. And so we need to make time. Integration is not reading about science and reading about that topic during the reading time. Integration is doing the activity and then reading about what you have done, writing about what you have done in that topic. So I would encourage you all to go take a look at what Evelyn Frame's doing at Monarch Grove. She has integrated animal and habitat into her lessons right now. They're starting right now on frog eggs and what she's doing with her children on frog eggs and development and habitat and all of that is pretty impressive. Thanks.
Thank you. You have a good internal clock. We're going to move on now to item number.
Can I say one more thing, Ms. Rautruz, really yes, quick? Just please. Kind of. So I've been going around with my LCAT meetings and kind of hearing feedback, and we talk about science and talk about Tristan. And again, just a kudos to Tristan. I've never seen a secondary teacher so well loved by elementary staff. I mean, seriously, I think, you know, from an elementary teacher standpoint, this is kind of a scary thing. Taking this on, learning it, as Ms. Neuhauser said, you know, understanding that. And so he does a masterful job at working with elementary teachers, breaking it down, you know, kind of getting it into where, again, we want that consistency no matter what kindergarten teacher you have, first grade teacher, second grade teacher, third grade teacher. And so he is definitely, I think it's a huge asset for us to keep him in that position for next year. And it's, again, as we walk around every site, secondary as well, really a lot of positives about having Tristan on board and helping them for another year.
Thank you for saying that, Mr. Pinkerton. And we are moving on to item number 9.03. This is the approved secondary instructional schedules. And Mrs. McGrath is our presenter.
Thank you. So for your consideration tonight, our two high school principals from the two comprehensive high schools are here to share the process that took place at with their staffs, as well as recommendations for schedules for the 17-18 school year. So I'd like to begin with Dr. Kyle Pruitt from Morro Bay High School.
Thank you, Ms. McGrath. Hello, everyone. I've also invited our assistant principal, Mr. Chris Jones, to join me. I'd actually like Mr. Shorba just to present for us tonight, if you wouldn't mind. I echo the sentiments of Mr. Pinkerton. He's excellent. I want to thank you all for considering the approval of our new bell schedule tonight. We've presented up on the screen so that you can take a look at that while I speak. I want to also take a moment to thank the members of my management team, the staff members on my management team, specifically our president, Peggy Flynn, Fatima Sala, and also Ms. Lene Coyner, who's actually in the audience tonight, have all been key contributors to our team, so I want to thank you. When I arrived at Morro Bay High School, I'll be speaking about process, how we arrived here tonight, and then Mr. Jones will address some of the benefits we feel come from this schedule. When I arrived at Morro Bay High School 2.5 years ago, and started meeting with our management team, there was already discussion about how we could make our current block schedule better. You know, there's always a conversation around how we can make things better for kids. And each year we would discuss it, and it would come to that crunch time of SLCTA needing to present a vote, and we never felt prepared with a schedule to move forward with that vote. And so we would put up our block schedule, which we were happy with, against a fallback schedule and continue with our current block schedule that we're on at this time. This year, that conversation changed. Our management team started again discussing bell schedules in September, and a result of the previous year's vote, our management team decided to take a little bit more active action. So last year's vote was a little bit closer to go moving to a different schedule, and so we decided to actively look at some scheduling options. I started this process by creating a Google survey to get staff input regarding questions like, did they want to change? What are the things that they wanted to change within our schedule? And what were the things that they were unwilling to change, teaching extra periods, those kinds of things? And we got feedback from the staff. The result of that in October from our staff was that some sort of a hybrid schedule was the overwhelmingly desired model that our staff was looking for. And so we were tasked as a management team to begin meeting and drafting and looking into existing hybrid schedules that other schools were using effectively that we might be able to present to our staff. And we came to some conclusions during that research. So in January and February, we did two student surveys. One was just a straight hybrid schedule versus a block schedule. We asked the kids, what do you think of these two things? And got their feedback. We also asked them questions like attention span. You know, how do you feel about 110 minutes? You know, would you feel that 70 minutes would be better? So we asked kids kind of about things that affect their lives in the classroom and got feedback from students that we looked at as a management team, as a staff. We also, at that time, had staff feedback. So we started to ask staff about what they thought, along with the things that they wanted to give away and wanted to do within the schedule. So we had parent meetings. We had an evening parent meeting conducted by the management team to bring parents in and ask for their feedback. At the same time, we put out a parent survey. Showed them the hybrid schedule and said that our staff was favoring this type of schedule. And we took all of that anonymous survey, and I gave every single comment that was presented to us to our staff for consideration before they made their decision. So they had in-person feedback to our management team. Parents were invited. Also, we had feedback from students and now from parents as to what they thought, both good and bad, about the proposed new schedule. And suggestions. At that time, from there, we had two formal staff survey straw votes. So before we took the real vote, we went to the staff with straw votes and said, okay, let's put the block schedule up against the hybrid schedule So which one would you vote for, our current schedule or hybrid? And hybrid won out in that situation. And then we said, what if there was a hybrid versus our fallback schedule? So a 5 of 6, basically every day, every period, 5 of 6. And it was clear that they indicated that the hybrid schedule was favored there as well. So when the SLCTA vote was taken, for our hybrid schedule versus 5 of 6, they have asked through their formal vote that you consider the approval of the hybrid schedule, which you see up on the screen tonight. So I am here to advocate for that schedule, and I'll let Mr. Jones point out some benefits that we see in this new hybrid schedule.
In looking at this, we had to see what would be the benefit of this schedule versus our current block schedule. In comparison to our current schedule, with the hybrid schedule, our students would see their teachers more often during the course of a week, as opposed to 2 to 3 days during the week, they'd see their teachers 4 days a week. This would allow for more consistent practice, smaller chunks of material, and less time for students to forget content from previous lessons. The schedule allows for 3 days in which the class periods are shorter. For those students that may struggle to pay attention for 110 minutes, this would benefit them, but it also leaves in place a 110-minute period once a week to allow for those CTE courses, science courses that benefit from having that lab time. This also helps address an issue that we face at Morro Bay High School with the block schedule, and students that have multiple absences during the week, a lot of times for athletics. If a student has a competition on Tuesday and Thursday, and they have a class that falls in the afternoon, they could miss a whole week of instruction for that particular class. If we happen to have a Monday holiday, and we have competition Tuesday, Thursday, 2 weeks in a row, they can miss 2 weeks of instruction for that particular class. And that would help that situation in that they'd be at least seeing that teacher 2 times a week as opposed to none at all in those particular situations. Lastly, one thing you'll notice about this schedule compared to our current schedule is that each one of the periods and classes starts on either a 5 minute or a 10-minute or a zero. You know, we had a student come talk to us and said, you know, if you could just have classes start on a 5 or a 0, Mr. Jones, I promise I'll be on class on time. Because with a start time of 8:18 or 9:57, I can just never remember that. So that was one thing we took in consideration. So this is some of the benefits that we see from this potential schedule here.
So again, we're just asking that you consider approval of our new hybrid schedule as voted on and supported by our staff at Morro Bay High School. And at this time, if you have any questions, we'd be happy to field those questions if we can.
Mrs. Sheffer? My question is, does this have any effect on the number of classes each student takes during the course of the year? Doesn't change the...
None. We remain on a semester schedule. We remain on the same amount of classes. The way I like to think, it's a horrible analogy maybe, but, you know, we have one big cake, and we used to eat it at, you know, 3 big pieces at a time, and now we're eating it in smaller bites, but it's the same cake sitting in front of those kids.
Okay, and then my other question is this going to be a big challenge to implement for the 2017-18 school year for the counselors and scheduling? And
no, the nice part is since it's a Bell schedule, the counselors, the selection process or registration process has remained exactly the same.
Okay.
I'm actually very encouraged and excited because this was so staff driven that they're excited about implementation.
No,
so they are, I know Ms. Coyner is probably just dying to get up here and say, yes, it's staff driven.
I appreciate that very much. I mean, it's instant buy-in by the staff.
Yes, and instructional minutes. Thank you, Ms. Coyner. Instructional minutes are exactly the same as well.
Okay.
So,
all right, thank you.
Yes.
Mr. Quisenberry?
Just a couple of questions.
Absolutely.
First of all, you had a very high percentage of buy-in. I believe 74% voted for this schedule.
Correct.
Okay, I just want to clarify that. And secondly, could you elaborate on how many students at Morro Bay High participate in athletics? A rough figure out of the, what are the 800 some students there?
Right, so approximately 850 students. Well, I think we're at 790 at this point, so I'm currently around 790. I would say close to 500 to 550 kids participate in athletics. So per semester, we're looking at, what was the count, Mr.
200 per season.
Yeah, about 200 per season during the three seasons. So it could be the same child, but we're having for each fall, winter, and spring season, 200 athletes.
And also, give me an idea about your CTE programs, classes, so forth. What's that like as far as participation go?
Well, it's very high. We're very excited about our CTE pathways that we're developing. I think Mr. Shorba talked a little bit about that. I know Ms. McGrath has talked about that. I have to give kudos to Mr. Palazzo, who's in the crowd, Mr. Pinkerton, and all of you. Every time I see you, I thank you because of our new auto shop that's been completed and the CTE programs that are just blossoming at Morro Bay High School. That, with the addition of some pathways with actual completer pathways where kids can enroll in new courses, like next year we'll have an intro to law course, which then the capstone course will be criminal justice. Before it was just a standalone course, and now it's an UCCSU course, intro to law, completed by criminal justice, which will give a kid CTE pathway completion. So we're very excited about that and a new healthcare pathway at Morro Bay High School. So just streamlining a little bit choices for kids and confirming that their choices that they make in college are actually things that they want to explore.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Mrs. Roger.
Thank you. I just would ask you, Dr. Pruitt, I understand that the schedule was voted by your staff. If you were the person selecting a schedule, what schedule would you select and why?
Wow. Listen to that question. So I love this schedule, to be very honest with you. I was one of the initial teachers at Salem Obispo High School that voted for the initial trimester. I like, after listening to my staff and listening to parent feedback, one of the main concerns that I had over the last 2 years was I consistently heard from teachers that they maybe didn't see a student for four straight class periods. We knew we had to do something to address that. I was at one side telling my teachers to look at DNF rates and the amount of students that were having DNFs at Morro Bay High School, which is very low compared to the state, but still a concern of mine. But also hearing from teachers that, on the other side, they weren't seeing a student for four periods, and how could a student keep up? When I actually looked at this hybrid schedule, when I heard from people like Mr. Jones who have taught and worked at schools that have a hybrid schedule, and the amount that the content teachers could see the kids, but then also the lab time the kids would have on Wednesdays and Thursdays during those block periods, it seemed like a perfect mesh, a perfect storm of a week's worth of experience for a student. And as soon as that dawned on me and it solved those kinds of issues for me, I was behind it 100%. So to answer your question, I would pick this, I would select this. I'm also excited that the staff said we need to change lanes and do something different to address it, and then we'll continue to look at it. So I could foresee our staff looking at it and making tweaks in the future to make it even better for kids. So, and I was proud of the communication we had from parents and kids. Obviously not all in agreement, but a majority supported the idea, and we feel good about that.
Sounds like your process was really inclusive, and that there was buy-in, and that people are going into this schedule change enthusiastically. So I commend your staff on coming up with something that they really feel will work for them and for the students at Morro Bay. I had two kids that went through the block schedule, and change is hard for me. I haven't moved my couch in 28 years, but I'm willing to look at a modified block, and I see the benefits there. So thank you for answering my question.
You're welcome.
I would just like to add that I like the connectedness of the students being with their teachers more than in the block schedule, and I also like the shorter period time, so I think students get more out of that, and it's easier to comprehend what's going on in that amount of time.
Okay.
So I'm very impressed with the solutions that I was at the night that the parents were talking. And, of course, parents get very attached to what they've had in the
Absolutely.
Past. And so it's very hard to give that up. So there was a lot of flexibility on the part of parents and teachers and students in this decision. So I applaud the way you handled this.
And thank you for attending that night. Appreciate
it. Yes. Oh, my pleasure. Thank you. And we would like to hear from anyone else from the public on this matter. Yes, please.
I can repeat the question, if that's okay. She asked how many students did we survey. One of our key members of our management team was in our social science department, and many of our kids take social science classes. And so I can't give you an exact number, but if a student was enrolled in social studies, they saw the survey and were surveyed. So it would be the amount of students who have a social studies course that received the survey, the student survey.
Was the student survey also in your newsletter on your online?
Yes, we also put it in my online newsletter for the students and included the parent survey there as well. Obviously, just for good and bad, just wanted my teachers to have all the information, wanted to give a voice to all my students and parents, in support or not, but that they made the most educated decision they could before they cast their vote. And that was the goal, and I think we achieved that goal.
Yeah. Mr. Quisenberry.
So in social studies, that would be modern world history, it would be U.S. history, it would be government and
economics,
correct?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Are there any more questions from anyone from the public? Yes, please.
Okay. Just to add to that, it was also done, math classes did it, APEX did it. We tried to get as many as we could, and if you had already done it, it wouldn't let you do it again. So we tried to get as many kids as possible. And if there were repeaters, it told them they couldn't do it again. And the other thing I wanted to add was, too, we're trying to make the kids ready for college. This was a schedule that we thought really applied to that, because you get the one day of the week where you have the lab. And if you're in college, you generally go 3 days a week. So you'd see your teachers 3 days a week. And if you have a lab, you have that one really big block. And it was a nice compromise for everybody. If you still wanted the big time, you've got it. And if you need little bits like math and foreign language, you need a little bit every day instead of big, huge chunks.
Could you identify yourself, too, in case someone wants to seek you out?
I just think everybody knows me. Lynette Coyner, PB 6 years, Morro Bay 5.
Thank you.
Math teacher. And APEX.
Thank you. I believe we're ready for Mr. O'Connor from SoHi.
Good evening. Thank you for inviting us here this evening. Our process, a little bit different, but yet very similar to Dr. Pruitt and as Mr. Jones described. We have to go back further. We have to go back 6 years. 6 years ago, we went through our WASP process, and at that time, our staff identified a critical academic need to look at a more prescriptive model in our instructional day. That was 6 years ago. During that time of our WASP, 6 years ago, we had surveyed staff, and we had gone through the entire process, and we'd asked for feedback. What are those absolutes that you want in a prescriptive model on an instructional day? And there was five clear things that came out. One was daily contact with students. Teachers really wanted to make sure that they saw their kids every day if possible. Two, teachers shared with us that they wanted to have access to daily preparation where possible, or near daily preparation, meaning they have a prep period. They wanted to have a manageable workload, meaning contact with students. They didn't want to end up having 200-plus students a day. They wanted to make sure it was manageable. They wanted to maintain the robust elective programs at our school, and they wanted to maintain athletics within the school day. There was clearly five key areas that they wanted to have within our system, and that was through our WASP process 6 years ago. Dr. Prater and Rick Robinette came and visited on September the 15th, met with our staff at a CRT, and at that time, earlier this year, brought to our attention a conversation. It was a good conversation. It was a timely conversation, much-needed conversation around equity within our system. The focus was with regard to equity for all of our students, with regard to curricular choices and access. And it moved a lot of people's thought process. It was a day of change. It was a day of like reflection, and it was a positive kind of conversation in many ways, and it got people to really think. But that was September 15th. So we were challenged. We were tasked with the question about equity within our school system and within our instructional day. Dr. Prater and Mr. Robinette made it clear to us that they wanted us to have a process in place. They wanted to try and make sure that we went through this process with our staff to really reflect on the level of equity within our system. We knew from prior years of WASC that there was really four or five key things, as I mentioned already, that our staff really believed in and looked for. So what we did was we created an instructional day committee, and the instructional day committee's primary focus was to tackle the question of equity and tackle the question of an instructional day for our school site. I commend the work of the Instructional Day Committee. They were very creative, they were very caring, they were very committed. Carrie Smith, who's sitting in the audience here this evening, was a member of the Instructional Day Committee, and I commend her work. Nathan Minard, Tom Weinshank, Shelley Benson, Brady Halverson, Nick Frost, and I'm sure I'm missing one at that particular moment in time, but I think you've got
Kate
the
Stevens.
Idea. Kate Stevens. So we try to make sure, thank you, we try to make sure we had a broad spectrum of staff, some of whom are parents with not only in our district but also at our school site. And our task from September the 15th through January was tough because we had really a blank slate. We had to come up with something that was a possible alternative to our current trimester system. I really commend the work of our management team, and specifically Lori Decker as the chair of our management team, because she and I met on a very regular basis, and she really helped guide the process from a management team perspective. Mrs. Liebrich is here this evening, and during our process, I think it was in October, maybe even early November, I don't have the exact date, but we shared out with our school site council what we were talking about and what we were discussing. We used a process where we communicated with staff, as you know, and you've got a brief on that, in TCT. Our Instructional Day Committee met regularly, almost once a week after school, after taking feedback from either TCT or from a management team kind of perspective. And they created a schedule that you have up here. And it's kind of interesting because it kind of morphed into something that we started out with literally a blank slate and said, okay, what could we do, what could we create to maintain those five basic principles: daily contact with kids, near daily prep for our teachers, manageable workload for teachers, athletics within the school day, and maintaining a robust program of electives. And so we went through this process all the way till January, and we then had a staff vote. Throughout that time period, there was a couple opportunities for myself to share with parents at Friday morning coffee with the principal, where the talk was, you know, you're looking at a schedule, we're looking at a schedule. But the problem was that we didn't have anything concrete. It was always a working, fluid kind of document. It was a little different. We also created a shared document where staff could basically post or push any question they may have with regard to our proposed hybrid schedule, as it was quickly named, versus the trimester. And we tried to answer those questions as logically and as intelligently as possible. It didn't mean that they necessarily answered the questions specifically for the teacher or anything like that, but we tried to push as much concrete information out there as possible. Ironically, we presented to our staff in mid-January the schedule that you have up here. So I'm going to look at that and point a couple things out, because it was different from the schedule that was created by Morro Bay, but yet there were remarkable similarities. If you notice that we decided in our instructional day committee with the hybrid schedule, we actually talked about moving TCT completely away from a Monday. We actually talked about moving it to a Wednesday and a Thursday, a late start on both days. And there was very specific reasons, because we wanted to gear our conversation about the best interest for students. So if you allow me to explain that to you, we recognize that most of our athletic events and concerts and band and theater performances seem to take place on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. And our argument was, if we're going to have a late start, why not have the late start on a Wednesday and a Thursday? TCT on a Wednesday morning as opposed to a Monday morning. We also thought it was very, very important for our students to have a period of intervention, a period where their students could go on a Thursday morning to either make up tests, needing extra tutorial help from staff, office hours. We really struggled with what we would call that time period, if it was an advisory, but it was going to be a time period where we were going to be open for students for one single hour for them to make contact with students, or with teachers, excuse me. We also made sure that throughout the schedule, we stayed in compliance with our instructional minutes. We wanted to make sure that we stayed in compliance with our contract day. We wanted to make sure that we were annualized and all the detail that we needed to have. Other things that we wanted to make sure is we wanted to make sure that we had athletics in the school day. And if you notice that in the school day, we were talking about a situation where we might have a seventh grade class where we would actually have athletics starting at 2:53. Currently, athletics starts at our school site at 2 o'clock, but we talked about athletics starting at 2:53. In order to push other ideas into our daily schedule, we thought that we could still have that. But we also talked about having seventh period, as you see on the board, being a viable option for students to take a different class. They could have taken a Spanish class, for example. They might want to take an English class. But we knew with our staff, and we talked about this, that we wouldn't necessarily offer a career technical education class or maybe a science class where we really understood the need to have a setup or a teardown like in a construction program or a metal fabrication class or an automotive class or maybe an AP chemistry, but maybe in Spanish 1. We talked to our staff during TCT who would be interested maybe in taking and teaching a zero period class or who would be teaching a seventh period class. We were looking at real flexibility within the school day, not only for our students but also for our staff. And so we presented this in January. The staff had an opportunity throughout our process to talk in management team. Each department had the opportunity to present to management team for about 5 minutes on the merits of our current trimester system or the merits of maybe an alternative approach. We took our vote in late January. Craig Stewart, our union president, is on our staff, did an awesome job where he literally took command of it. He walked and canvassed from teacher to teacher to try and make sure that he had every single SLCTA member actually vote. And I think you guys saw the results of that vote. We had approximately, I think it was 24 staff that were in favor of the hybrid schedule that you have in front of you, and we had 45 staff, I believe, that were in favor of the current trimester system. We went through a very, very exhaustive process. It was collaborative. It was collegial. It was stressful. It was a time where there was a lot of emotion, but we also made sure that we went from September the 15th in a timely manner until mid to late January. We didn't want to have it out there where we were just kind of moving along and moving along. On reflection, and I've talked to staff in our instructional day committee, we mentioned it a little bit, a management team. On reflection, one of the areas that we probably could have done differently or better, and it's always problematic because you're armchair quarterbacking it a little bit, is how much did we involve our parent community and how much do we involve our student community. But we were working sort of kind of within a little bit of a vacuum, a little bit of a bubble, because we were charged with the goal to look at an alternative, and the alternative was forming organically almost week by week. And it would be difficult and problematic to roll something out because I think the danger or the fear was to derail that process. And so it was really good for us to kind of keep that process as pure as possible with our staff and then have our vote. And so I'm here this evening to give you that process information, to let you look at what we had created, and to honor the vote of our staff. Thank you.
Dr. Prater.
Yeah, and Mr. Pinkerton just pointed this out to me, and I didn't catch it, but on the agenda tonight, there's where it says San Luis High School voted 66% in favor of the current trimester schedule. Principal Leslie O'Connor will present the process recommendation regarding, and then in highlight this schedule. The problem is that hyperlink brings up the hybrid. And I don't know if Leslie had a chance to catch it. No. Just caught that, but that's not the intention. The intention...
Isn't this the regular schedule?
No, that's the hybrid. And that's, we had too many schedules floating around. So what I want, just in case you're sweating over there, my recommendation, and I believe Mr. O'Connor's intention, is to recommend that we maintain the trimester schedule at San Luis Obispo High School for next year and honor the vote. My apologies.
Not a problem. Absolutely. I actually hadn't had a chance to look at it, so I wouldn't have clicked on the link. And I was here to let you know to the process and to honor the vote of our staff. So I'll take questions.
Yes, thank you. Mr. Wisenberry.
Well, I want to commend you and your staff for their hard work, and I appreciate the fact that you looked at the schedule and you went through a process of addressing it. Are we still going to be offering AP classes all three trimesters?
Absolutely. And that was something, you know, we looked at in our instructional day committee. We looked at it from the perspective of the offerings that we have for our students. And if we had purified our trimester. Purified it meaning that all courses were going to be two courses no matter what. I can't predict, but I would say, an estimated guess, that you would have had a lot of people and a lot of students in a situation of uproar because it was problematic, and it is problematic for them, culturally or belief-wise, to get all of what they need, whatever that may be, defined by them, to be prepared for the examination that usually comes in May.
Okay. Thank you.
Mrs. Roger.
Thank you. Mr. O'Connor, thank you for all the work that, thank you and your staff.
Thank you.
For all of the work that went into the formulation of this alternative schedule and then the honoring the vote of your staff to continue with the trimester system. I would pose to you, though, the same question that I asked Dr. Pruitt. If it were your decision to make as to what kind of schedule you would have at San Luis High School, what schedule would you have and why?
Well, that's a really good question. It's something I've never really thought about before. I'm being facetious. Honestly, I love the work of our staff and our instructional day committee. I look back and think about what we created and the process that we went through in our previous WASC. We created seven alternative possible schedules, and we presented them at length with at that time for our staff. We went through like almost a three-year review. The conversation that Dr. Prater and Rick Robinette had with our staff changed the equation pretty quickly. It was sort of kind of like, okay, really think about this. Going into the process, I would never have thought that we could have created something like the hybrid schedule. It actually almost mirrored what Morro Bay were creating at similar times. If I had my druthers, personally, I think we should have a semester system. I like the hybrid that we created, and the reason why is because I struggle with the pace and the gap that we have for not all of our students, but a lot of our students with regard to the gap, but all of our students with regard to the pace, and not just our students, but also our staff. You know, when you're asked in the second trimester to have a course that's 56 days long, and this past winter, our second trimester has been a lot of poor weather, bad weather, and a lot of ill health, kids miss school. They could miss 10, 12, 15% of the curriculum. First trimester, 62 days. Second trimester, 61. It varies. But the middle trimester is always 56. So you've got a week and a day of less time in a particular course. So I think that pace is a real problem. I also think the gap is a real problem. So if you're asking my opinion, I think a semester system, and I really like and love the creation and the creativity that our staff put together with regard to the hybrid system. I think we really should think about having an intervention period of time. I do believe that, you know, I love TCT, but I'm not sure if Monday morning is the best time for TCT. Personally, I think there's arguments pro and con that it could be another Monday. Another day in the week, like a Wednesday, just as a thought. I hope I answered your question.
Yes, you did, and I appreciate hearing your thoughts about it. And I would share that the board certainly heard from parents and staff regarding the San Luis Obispo High School schedule. Thank you.
Mrs. Shepherd. I note in reviewing the votes for each schedule that they all passed with a resounding majority. But San Luis High, there does seem to be perhaps, I don't know that it will be continuing interest, but it appeared greater interest in exploring options than Los Osos Middle School and Morro Bay High School, because the current trimester schedule, keeping the current schedule, had the lowest percentage in favor than the other two schools, with 66%. Of course, that's still a super majority, I suppose. But I think that it indicates, I don't know, I'm sure this is not an exercise you want to go through every year, nor should you. But I think that exploring, knowing that there is interest on the part of staff to continue taking a look at this is worth noting. I
when my kids went to San Luis High, I struggled with that schedule. I was never convinced it was the best possible schedule. I was on management team. It was the entire for 6 years, and it was always the most contentious part of being on management team was dealing with the schedule. So I think it's important for, especially for parents to know that it is struggled with and examined closely every year. And I think that indicates that because there is always, at least my experience, there is a sense of unease by a significant number of people that it does bear continual exploration and determining whether it is in the best interests of the students and the staff. I'm not saying it's not, but it is not, and it has never been an easily resolved issue in my entire involvement with the schools.
I appreciate you sharing that with us. Thank you.
Mr. Millar.
Thank you. I would just remind everybody, even though, of course, it's good to honor the vote of staff for schedules, but it's up to the board. So my question for Dr. Prater is it your recommendation that the board stay with the trimester system at SLO High School for this coming school year?
That is my recommendation.
Thank
you. Just so you know, everyone's clear, there's a saying that I hold to, and I believe it's true in my experience, that process is the product. I believe that the trimester or the hybrid, these are just systems and structures that people put into place to move kids through a day and for teachers to teach in a day, and they have their merits on both sides. But if you do the research, there's inconclusive evidence that either one makes massive differences in achievement. So that's why I'm saying that I appreciate the work Mr. O'Connor and his staff went through. I know it wasn't difficult. I know it was difficult. That's really what I meant to say. I know it was difficult, and it was disruptive. And sometimes being disruptive is okay, to question our practices and to really examine whether what we're doing is actually benefiting kids. And I see the merits of the trimester, and I see the merits of a hybrid block semester schedule. I do. But I believe that the process needs to be honored. And I believe San Luis Obispo High School, as well as Morro Bay High School, went through a very good process. And I don't believe the conversation's over. I believe there still needs to be. They're going through a WASC review now. I think there needs to be continual examination. People in our profession must examine our practices, or we're not being honest with ourselves. So with that, my recommendation is to honor the process and to give the staff that voted 66% in favor of the trimester their rightful due.
Good. Thank you, Dr.
I just had a follow-up question. And I agree that the process and the conversation are important. I was just wanted to make sure I knew what your recommendation was. What you recommend. So, Leslie, you used the term gap. Are you referring to that learning gap where you're between trimesters in a particular course? Or?
Yeah, I'm referencing the gap. I mean, if you have a situation where Tristan did an awesome job explaining next generation science standards, and we're going to have students who are going to come in and they're going to enter biology, and then they'll not have biology, and then they'll have biology, or they'll come in and they'll not have chemistry, but they'll be in Algebra 2 the first trimester and they won't have chemistry, and that can be a positive thing because they get a little more math and then they go into chemistry. But maybe another student goes straight into chemistry and they're going to struggle right away because they're not really ready for it. There's nuances to it and there's complexities, but, you know, foreign language, world languages, if you're in Spanish and then all of a sudden you've got a gap for 12 weeks or 56 days and then you go to Spanish. So there's problems either way. That's what I'm referencing with the gap.
Thanks, Liz.
I would just like to say that having had a student at SLO High last year at this time, I'm so fondly remembering how difficult it is to get through that senior and junior year of back-to-back, wall-to-wall AP classes. And so I very much appreciate how hard the committee worked to come up with an alternative to that, and I think this hybrid was an excellent alternative. And you mentioned, Mr. O'Connor, that what you might have done differently maybe you'll do differently next year, would be to involve parents early on in that process, because I have a feeling that they experience this. They want their students to be able to take band and choir, but they feel like they can't because of the AP course load. And there are solutions to that problem that have been put forth. So I'm very grateful that they did the work and that it's now available for that kind of research. And gosh, I wish my kids could have been there for that kind of program. So we now have a decision to make.
Thank you.
And we have a question, Dr. Prater, about how. Sorry. Is there anyone from the public who would like to address?
I have a request to speak to this item. Eddie Smith.
So my name's Eddie Smith, and my first day of high school, I walked into a room full of computers and drafting desks. I was standing up like this. And it was taught by that man, Mr. Fayler, there. And so I've taken that class pretty much every year so far. And I've gone to a competition called Skills USA for drafting and won regionals 3 times in a row and gone to state 3 years in a row. And it's led me to my passion of architectural engineering, of what I want to study in college. And I am fearing that I wouldn't be able to have had that opportunity with this new proposed semester schedule because of the lack of classes that you are missing if you change that. Based on the math alone, so with 2 semesters of 6 classes each, you have 12 classes per year, right? And with the trimester, you have 15. So in 1 year, you lose 3 classes. Over the course of 4 years, you lose 12 classes in all, which is effectively a year of learning that just disappears. So that's my biggest concern with this new semester bill. And even though it looks like the trimester is going to stay on for another year, I just fear for future students coming in that they won't have the opportunity that I had with finding that passion so early on and just being forced into these classes like biology and English and math and not taking other classes like the CTE classes like wood or ag sciences or even metal. So that's just my thoughts on that. Thank you.
Is there anyone else from the public who would like to speak?
I didn't know I was going to talk, but I will after he talked. My name is Cindy Vornbaum. I have a 10th grader at San Luis High School, my oldest son. He is a very smart kid, nice, 4.6 GPA, crazy smart, but the only classes he comes home and talks about are metal shop and auto shop, and that's all he wants to tell us about school. He will take 3 AP classes next year, but he will take auto shop 2, which is 2 trimesters. He's already trying to figure out how he can get middle shop 2 to fit into his schedule, and he plays 2 sports. So hearing the block schedule, the semester schedule, my husband jokingly says, he's this modern-day Renaissance kid. He loves doing all these hands-on classes, but academically he will go to college and become something, but I think it will be all these hands-on practical skills he's getting at San Luis High School that he wouldn't get in a semester system, I think. And I'm new to this high school, and, as we try to figure out his junior year, we're like, okay, can we fit it all in? Because there's so much available to the kids. So I appreciate that about the high school, and I hope we don't lose it for my younger son as he comes up. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else? Thank you. Dr. Prater, I believe we have a question about whether you want this to be together. Okay.
So I'm asking you to approve the trimester. I'm asking you to approve the votes for the Los Osos Middle School, Morro Bay High School, and San Luis Obispo High School schedules based on the staff votes. And Laguna Middle School is still in the process of voting, so we'll bring that back to you later.
Excellent.
I'll move approval of all three schedules as voted for by the staffs.
I'll second that. I have a motion by Mr. Quisenberry and a second by Mr. Buckman. And this is a regular vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. So we have 6-0 with one absence. We're now moving on to number 9.04, LCAP Design and Outreach Update. Mrs. McGrath. You know how to clear a room, Mrs. McGrath.
I told Anthony it's not just him. So I'm happy to share with you tonight the very popular topic of LCAP design and outreach. So I will first talk to you about outreach procedures and events that have taken place in order for us to gather input from a variety of stakeholders. So these are LCAP outreach and design has kind of been an ongoing topic that we've continued to bring back. So I'm just bringing up some of the events that have taken place since we last discussed this. So as Mr. Pinkerton mentioned earlier, we've been doing site presentations. So I believe we probably have 5-ish left. I think we probably have about 2/3 of those complete. It's a great opportunity for us to share information, to gather some feedback during that time, but probably even more valuable are the surveys that then are distributed to sites after that that allow the opportunity for people to kind of think and to provide valuable feedback when it comes to LCAP and the LEA plan. Mr. Pinkerton also conducted a district office presentation that included union representation in order to allow for feedback on that topic as well. We mentioned the Superintendent Student Senate. That was an excellent opportunity for secondary students to give us really specific feedback on the LCAP areas. They are going back to their sites to gather additional information, and we'll bring that back to us in April. So we're looking forward to hearing from them. And the surveys have been a great opportunity for all stakeholders to provide additional input. In addition, at DLAC, the information was presented as well at DTAC and parent leaders for PTA leadership as well, and surveys provided for all of those groups. The design, just to remind you, kind of refresh ideas around this, is this will be year one of our new 3-year cycle. So the upcoming kind of starts our new 3-year cycle, and then that will hold true for 3 years, although we can make slight adjustments as we go along based on what our needs are. There is a new template that we're anxiously awaiting from the state in order to provide that for you. And as you well know, there's the new state data dashboard that will provide a change in our metrics. Finally, we're looking at adjusting our focus areas. Yeah. Go ahead.
I just have an acronym question.
Please.
What is DTAC? I know what DLAC is. I don't know what DTAC is.
Title I Advisory Committee.
Well, that doesn't even add
district
up at all.
District Title Advisory. It's education. You know, we have to have a lot of letters. Okay. It's a good guess. It's a good guess.
Thank you.
You bet. Change to our focus areas. We are looking at some changes. As Tristan spoke about earlier, we have our new science standards that really need a good home. We also have social studies standards, right, that are about to be new social studies standards that are also, we haven't been able to really think of a logical place for those. Also, we used to very deliberately have math as its own focus area, and very deliberately was the first focus area. And as you saw in our recent data, it is one of our strongest areas now. So I think, you know, kudos to a lot of people that put a lot of time, resources, energy, et cetera,
into making math great in our district. And although that work is never finished, of course, we do think it's time to transition that to all curriculum and core areas, perhaps being our first area that would contain English language arts with English language development, mathematics, science, and social studies with best instruction for all students. In our new focus area one would be our recommendation. And let the second area be how are we getting targeted and specific of students that need us in our second focus area. So it seems like a time to look for a shift when it comes to those as we see the difference in math and also new science standards, new social studies standards, et cetera. So I think our data as well as new standards are kind of calling for us to look at that a little differently. The next one is our interventions and supports that I just mentioned and culture of care. That's also kind of calling for a change when it comes to STEAM and CTE. So with STEAM, what we're finding is that principals and site leaders are really wrestling with STEAM, should those things be the S within science? Then where should I put that really in science things? Is it really innovation? I'm struggling, should I put those things in innovation? So I think it's turned into the place of some of those things are specific to science. Some of those things in the T are specific to technology. Some of those things in E for engineering are specific to science, right? We have the arts as part of the core, and we have math as part of the core. So we felt like it was time to add integrated STEAM-specific things into the innovation area and to hold on, of course, to our STEAM development. But that seems to make more sense when it's the integrated pieces to be part of innovation, when it's those standalone science, math, engineering, et cetera, to stay within that first core area of all academic areas. So we would suggest that change as well as career technical education being embedded as an area that doesn't need to stand alone. Obviously, our work around that does not change, but it seems to be better embedded within the other areas to make more sense for principals and teachers. Technology and innovation remaining the same as what we're suggesting, as well as our data culture. So a lot of people have asked the question of why wouldn't you have data culture as part of your first or second area? Why does it need to stand alone? But I do feel strongly that we still have a ways to go in our district of how are we really, truly taking a hard look at data, monitoring progress towards student achievement, and wrapping our heads around how we can use data cycles effectively at our sites. So I feel like at this point, it still needs to remain its own standalone focus area. So these are shifts that we've been playing with and looking at that might make some more sense for us for our new three-year template. And I'm happy to field any questions.
Mr. Bookman.
As I look at intervention and supports, I think we have a lot of them in the district, and I think just maybe for people watching and just to review for me, can you just give us some of those? Because I there's probably 10. I don't know how many there are.
There's tons. Yeah. So if you just pick a focus area, pick one of the major academic core areas. If you think about mathematics, that we look at that we have specific classes for kids that are struggling, right, that would be in addition to their core area. We have a lot of supports within their regular math class. So it could be software programs that teachers are using, ST Math you've heard about in the past, or Redbird or Wowzers, or, there's other programs that help teachers to be more targeted and to give additional specific information that kids are needing. So, it depends on which area we're talking about, but there are a lot of things that we do above and beyond for kids that need it the most.
Are there any other questions for Mrs. McGrath? Would anyone from the public like to speak to this subject? I guess you answered all of our questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This, I'm sorry. I'm already.
Sorry. So we're moving on to 9.05, Measure D.
Yes, I'm going to have Mr. Plaza talk about the next two projects a little bit more in depth in terms of delivery methods as well.
Hello.
Good evening.
I'm a little insecure because usually I'm the one that's the magician that clears a room, makes everyone disappear, but there's actually some audience tonight. Well, that's true. That's true. So we're bringing two items forward tonight on kind of the last major projects we're going to be kind of moving forward with over this summer, starting this summer, under Measure D. The first project is our kind of quasi-modernization, if you will, at Morrow Elementary School. What that's going to entail is re-roofing the entire main building, which currently is kind of the older building with the multipurpose room, is the church that's now renting it from us. We're going to be painting the campus as a whole. So that campus has not been painted in quite a long time. And then repaving the parking lots out there. If you go out there now, there's potholes larger than my kids. So we need to really get those fixed up. There's quite a few tenants that use that space on a daily basis. We do generate quite a bit of revenue from those tenants, and we do have some schools that do rent that space and are utilizing it. So it's important that we keep that asset that the district owns in good shape, in working order, so that it's functional, safe, and is good use for our tenants that are out there right now. And we do have some district programs out there, adult school and some of the other, you know, corollary programs that they have do happen out there at the campus. We didn't do any surveys. We didn't do any kind of things that the high school did for the schedule, but we did have several meetings with our internal staff and discuss what was the best delivery method for that project, given all the different moving parts and pieces and the various tenants that will be affected by that work this summer, and came up with the concept to engage a district or a lease-back contractor that we can pick based on the best value methodology that we've established in the prior lease-back RFQ RFPs that we've currently got out on the street right now at C.L. Smith, Slow High, and Morrow Bay High, and utilize that same methodology for putting out an RFQ/P for this project within the next week to start soliciting a contractor, a developer to be on board to help us get this project going for this summer. So we're seeking board approval tonight to authorize issuance of an RFQ/P for lease-back contractor for the Morrow Elementary School modernization project.
Are we just looking for a consensus here, or are we looking? Looks like it says yes. Are we looking for consensus, a thumbs up, or a vote?
No, yeah.
We need a vote. It okay. Is,
yeah.
Well, it says discussion.
So I'll.
Are we okay?
Okay. I'll move approval of item 9.05 as presented.
And I'll second that if I may.
Okay. We have a motion by Mrs. Roger and a second by Mr. Buckman. Is there? Yeah.
Nope.
Sorry. Before we take our vote, is there anyone from the public who would like to comment on this matter? Seeing no one, continue with the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. 6-0 with one absence. Go forward, Mr. Palazzo,
okay,
to your next item.
So, I still haven't cleared the room. I'm starting to get a little insecure about my ability to clear a room. So the final project, the final major project that we're contemplating right now for this summer is the painting of three of our other sites. This involves Del Mar Elementary School. We'll get the exterior will be painted this summer. Sinsheimer Elementary School, we'll get the campus one being painted in the exterior in its entirety. And then Sunnyside Elementary School, which again houses a lot of district programs, several preschools, and the county Cal Fire Sheriff's has facilities out there. So it's a highly utilized facility by both tenants and the district for their programs. And it's also has not been painted in quite a long time. So it's in pretty dire need, if you will, of a paint job for protecting that asset as well. Del Mar Elementary will probably do a little bit more work here like we did at C.L. Smith, where we'll be removing some of the wood siding, patching a lot more of the stucco, because again, out here on the coast, and at Sunnyside as well, it's a lot more harsh environment than we see, say, in the city. So we'll be doing some things like that here at Del Mar Elementary, as well as some paving and filling in some of the weird dirt areas in between the buildings that we've got kind of all around this campus, and kind of trying to clean that up so it becomes less of a maintenance, long-term maintenance item. But for the most part, these projects are fairly straightforward. Two of the campuses will be basically empty all summer, and the Sunnyside Elementary School, we've kind of been notifying the tenants, and we'll be, again, tying them in very closely with the schedule as we did with some of the work out there last summer. Our leadership team and within Measure D determined that the design bid build delivery method, in other words, public bid, would be probably most appropriate for this project due to its straightforward nature, not a lot of interference with the tenants that will be on the campuses, and ability to kind of give a contractor a good scope of work that they can really knock out this summer and get some economies of scale with sort of three major paint jobs at the three campuses. And hopefully, reduce our overhead costs, if you will, on putting out a larger package out to the public for bid. So we're seeking approval to move forward with issuing those documents for bid here very shortly for work to begin this summer.
So we'll have board discussion, and then we'll go to the public. Would that be you, Mrs. Sheffer?
I was being all in favor of getting rid of weird dirt problems. I was going to... move approval of.
Okay. And let me just go to the public first, unless someone else wanted to discuss.
I just have a quick question. Yes. Is Del Mar a summer school site?
No.
Baywood is, yeah. Del Mar is not.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Is there anyone from the public who would like to comment on this item? Seeing no one, Mrs. Sheffer?
And we do plan our summer schools around these projects.
Yeah.
So we communicate with Amy, yeah, with the principal, so... It will be a rotating summer school as we kind of hit campuses over the years.
Okay. I would move approval of item 9.06.
Motion by Mrs. Sheffer, a second by Mr. Millar. All in favor?
Aye.
Passes 6-0 with one absence. Excuse me, and we're going on.
We're shaping up for a great summer. Yeah, thank you.
All right, you'll be busy. We're moving on to the action consent items. Please let me know if you want to pull one for discussion. Item 10.01, approval of certificated and classified personnel items.
Cool.
Item 10.02, approval of purchase orders. Item 10.03, approval of furniture and equipment requests. And item 10.04, acceptance of donations.
Catherine, I made a mistake. I'd like to switch and pull 10.02.
10.02. Okay, thank you, Mr.
Thank
Buckman.
You.
Okay, so, and 10.05, the approval of foreign exchange organizations.
I move approval of items 10.01, 10.03 through 10.05.
Second. There's a motion by Mr. Millar, a second by Mrs. Sheffer. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Passes 6-0. With one absence. And now, Mr. Buckman, you wanted to comment on 10.02.
Yeah, just quickly, I guess this may be a Ryan question. I was going through these, and I noticed that we have two items that look specifically related to the big storms we just recently have. To Greenvale Tree Company and to Smith & Son's disaster. I'm just wondering whether there'll be more this showing up in our budget, and maybe, I guess, what account do these come from, and any estimate or how we're going to pay for this?
Yeah, so the Smith & Sons was fire-related, San Luis Obispo High School, in terms of that cost. So that is it's covered by insurance, so though we'll pay for it now, we are going through the reimbursement process with them for both the construction, equipment, furniture loss. In this case, it was Smith & Sons coming in and actually doing the demo work and cleaning up the site, so that's that one. We've also inquired with CISC about the actual catastrophic day we had throughout the district in terms of losing trees and Greenvale. And so that is actually another potential, reimbursement for us in terms of all of these. So currently Mandy is working with Arnie Salacci to kind of pull together all of these Greenvale costs, mm-hmm, so that we can submit that as a potential claim as well.
Great. Okay. So I move approval of 10.02.
I'll second.
That's a motion by Mr. Buckman and a second by Mr. Quisenberry. All in favor?
Aye.
That's 06, one absence. And then we just move on to advanced agenda. Does anyone have any advanced agenda? We included that in the original vote.
Pardon me?
No, it wasn't pulled, sorry. We're talking about the item number 10.05, the Foreign Exchange Organization.
I included it in my motion, 10.01, 10.03,
10.05. Okay, we're good on that. So advanced agenda, no one. Moving on to board reports. Anyone like to share a board report? Mrs. Rupture.
I'll share that we were invited at the last board meeting to attend the SLCTA bingo fundraiser for their scholarship program. And Mrs. Sheffer, Mr. Buckman, Dr. Eisendraft Rogers, and I were able to go. And it was very fun. It was a really fun night. I didn't win, but I had fun nonetheless, and there was great food, and people were just really excited and happy. And Mr. Buckman, I think, bid on and won five or six of the items in the silent auction.
I bid on too many.
And closely followed by Mrs. Sheffer, I believe we carried three items to her car. So we enjoyed ourselves, and that was one thing. Then also today I participated as the board rep to SEIU negotiations, which were very constructive, and it's always a pleasure to work with that group. Thank you.
It was a big turnout at the Grange Hall, too. It was completely packed. Yeah. It was like wall-to-wall tables and people filling those tables. It was a great activity. That's all on the board report.
Sorry.
Mr. Buckman?
I was able to go to the Loam's. I think it was the Wicked Witches of Oz. I was blown away at this. I mean, it was a middle school production, but it probably could have been at the PAC. It was fantastic. I also was able to attend the LCAP meeting here up at the district office. Was the union and district office staff. I was able to attend the PTA leaders group, and I made it over to Myla Vukovic-Lubar's Women of Distinction dinner, and I'm hesitant, but I learned last week that I'm going to be one of the vice presidents on the new NAACP that's being formed. So that was a tremendous honor.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
And I believe Mrs. Sainsbury, one of our teachers, actually wrote the play that you attended, right?
Yes.
Is that correct?
I didn't do that.
Yes, that was impressive. Mr. Quisenberry.
Just a couple of things. Every Friday I get to pick up my grandson here at Del Mar Elementary and spend the afternoon with him. And often we explore different parts of Morro Bay. But we did, last Friday I happened to go by the high school and check out two things. How we're progressing with trees, and that's moving along quite nicely, thanks to our staff. And also the pool, which just doesn't seem to go as fast as I would like, but I can see that foundations are poured and they're ready to do some construction of some of the buildings auxiliary to the pool. A couple of other things. I had a chance to invite Dr. Prater to take a look at one of our volunteer groups in Los Osos, the People Helping People, and he was gracious enough to come to see our food distribution, had some interesting conversations with some of our volunteers and some of the folks who come as clients. And it's really, I think, it's a very positive environment. And we do serve a range of people. A lot of folks on fixed incomes, grandparents taking care of preschool kids, and then I see a few of our school parents going there to pick up some additional food, help them make it through the month. One last thing, I'll make it really quick. Saw a great program last night, Becoming a Night Owl, on Independent Lens on our local public television station on Black Rock Continuation School in the desert there, I think near 29 Palms. And it was a wonderful program focusing on the struggles that those students often have just to get to school every day. And the incredible effort made by those teachers and administration to make sure that those kids are successful. And I know that we have a similar type of program here at Pacific Beach, and I would encourage anybody, it's a fascinating hour or more, I think it's more than an hour, and I think you can get that by going to the public television PBS website and calling up. It's on Independent Lens. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Quisenberry. Looks like that's all for board reports. And we stand adjourned until our next meeting on April 11th. Good night.